loads of Bagel Tech F1 on time, as ever. Only half an hour late. It wouldn't be a Bagel Tech podcast if it was actually broadcast on time. I dread to think what's going to happen in the coming months. Now, we've decided to change everything to Justine TV. We've had a total loss of broadcasting sound for some reason. But hey, there we go. Joining me this evening, Tony Blunt, unfortunately, is out to work. But we've got Sarah below me. How are you doing, missus?
I'm very well, thank you.
Discussing this week's race in F1.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, and what a good one it was.
It was okay.
Bit of controversy, plenty of passing.
Yeah, from that point of view, it's very good.
Next to her, we got Steve Neighbour.
Hello, sir, how are you?
He's left the Elmug event to come back and broadcast.
Absolutely. That was a good race. I enjoyed it. Good Elmug meeting tonight, but no, definitely worth coming back and talking about this race. It was an excellent race. Really enjoyed it.
Elmug will have to join in the next one.
No, absolutely. Next time, I promise we'll do it.
Next time it's on Monday.
Yeah, we can do that.
Right, the week in F1, we were at the Italian Grand Prix. It was Monza. We love Monza. I've got to say, of all the courses out there, I've got to say Belgium is my favourite and Monza's my second favourite. I think it's a simple course, plenty of straights, plenty of passing opportunity, couple of really good tight chicanes. It's my driving course. I think it's superb.
I don't know if Mr. Hamilton, I don't want to go into the detail here. I don't know if Mr. Hamilton would agree with your comment of plenty passing opportunity. but is it really your favourite course? I'm surprised. I'm not too chuffed by it because it is quick, but it's I prefer Magny-Cours or
well, I said Belgium.
Belgium.
My favourite's Belgium. Definitely Spa. I think Spa is superb. It's the best one on the circuit because of the undulations. But the thing with Monza is it's a fast, simple course. There's not a lot that's to it. There's not a huge amount that's technical. It's just throw yourself into it. There is passing points, but not many. And the DRS has made a huge difference to this year's layout, hasn't it?
Yeah. Can I just ask a quick question on that?
Go on.
I don't know which circuits you've been to see Formula One at, and I'd love to get some comments from the people who listen and watch and etc. But what circuits are the best circuits to go watch live at? Because I'll tell you what, that first corner Monza must be a hell of a corner to watch the Grand Prix at, because they are coming into that first corner at such a speed, and to see the action that went on at that first corner must be a good circuit to go watch the live racing at. So of all the circuits I'd like to go watch, I think that would be one that I'd like to travel to go watch the Grand Prix at.
Well, we were talking last time about, has F1 got an issue with turn one? Because, you were a drunk, Steve. You won't remember this.
what race was that?
Belgium. We were saying, has F1 got an issue with turn one? Because, you think about short leads into it and you end up with a big crunch and everyone bottoms out. And then if you look at a big long lead straights like Melbourne, you're actually asking them for people to cut in front of each other and then collide. Is there an issue at turn one, or is it just one of those occupational hazards of F1?
I think it's one of those things that certainly having a tight, twisty bend at the start of as the first bend is asking for trouble, because you've got all 24 cars going into it. And it's a recipe for disaster, as we saw yesterday with Liuzzi's car. He lost it. And, he was, as Martin Brundle described it, waiting to go to the scene of an accident. It was just a case of who he was going to collect.
Steve, you got a thought about whether F1's got a turn one problem?
I think it's... I think they like the fact that they have that first corner, the first kind of start, and then the excitement of that first corner. I think they like it. I think it's good for the TV. I think... you always, it's a business, and for a business to be good, you need people to get attention to when it's starting, when it's finishing, whatever the product is, whether the launch, whatever it is, you need to get people there from the off to the very finish, and to make sure people watch the first bit of the race, it's good to have a first corner that's quite dangerous and, it's going to be a bit of action on it. So I think it's all part of the business strategy to have an exciting and entertaining first corner.
So basically then, this week, the first corner didn't disappoint. We've got the Petrov crash straight at the start. I mean, talk us through that one. Did that Was that something that should have been avoided, or was it a natural hazard of the fact that they all crossed the white line going down that straight?
Well, I think that was really caused by Liuzzi losing it at the back and then careering across the shortcut, if you like, across the grass. And it was just a case of who he was going to collect.
Well, to be fair, he put a wheel on the grass and he had both wheels on the grass at one point, which is where the slide started to happen back at the first advertising board.
Yeah.
I got a nice picture of it here, just that Liuzzi just about to career in. I thought what was quite interesting was Mark Webber dropped three places at the start, and if he'd have dropped a fourth, he'd have been cleaned out as well.
Well, it's the same with Jensen. He dropped back a couple of places, and he can't have been too far in front of that.
It was an amazing start for me. I mean, the Alonso start from fourth position to first position. How on earth he did that with the other cars that he's racing against? It's not as if they are Muppets that he's racing against. He did an amazing job of that, how he did it. He did well there. It was an amazing start.
Yeah, it was great to watch.
Can I be a little bit... can I say something which might be a little bit dodgy?
Go on then.
Did anybody notice what I said at the beginning? But the other girls that hold the flags?
Right.
Yeah.
Did anyone notice that the girl holding the main flag right at the very front wasn't your typical model type?
Go on, what was she like? Because I haven't got a picture of that.
Steve.
phrasing it extremely carefully.
16 stone? 17 stone?
What's wrong with that?
Well, it's nothing wrong with it at all.
I dream of 16 stone, dude.
But it was just that she stood out so much. It was obviously somebody's daughter, maybe, whose dad was involved in the race or something.
But it
was
just
really obvious. I just noticed it. Maybe I shouldn't look at the girls. Maybe that's my fault. Maybe.
Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe it's not part of the podcast and not part of the racing. I'll tell you what I think is part of the racing, and I'll tell you what I thought was really horrendous, was the sunglasses. Did you spot the sunglasses?
Oh,
on Jensen.
Well, no, don't even start with just Jensen. I mean, here we go. There's Massa. Massa looks fine. He's got a pair of Ray-Bans on. It's the classic look. It's quintessential. It's Steve McQueen. He looks the business. And then you go to Jensen. Jensen looks like he's left Nancy DeLolio bleeding in an alley. He's got the most horrific pair of Monaco girly sunglasses on you've ever seen. Swiftly followed by Alonso in a set of that look, okay, they're a little bit more buggish, they're a little bit more Bono, but they're still a little bit girly as well as. And then finally, topping them all off, Lewis. Lewis has got a set of black aviators that look like he's taken them off a Monaco leather handbag queen.
That's probably because his missus dressed him.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Old Nicole.
Yeah.
Or whatever her name is.
They're bigger than Lewis's sunglasses are bigger than Dennis Taylor's that he used to wear when he played snooker.
Lewis's sunglasses are nearly bigger than his damn face. The two of them together exceed the width of his skull.
I'm sure if you looked online, you'd find who the supplier was. I'm sure it's I suppose if you're going to advertise sunglasses, you've got to give them something that is completely pretentious, completely out of place to make them noticeable rather than just a normal pair of sunglasses. Us.
If it's not a set of Ray-Bans or it's not a set of aviators, it's just not F1. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, Massas are actually quite nice. But
they're starting to look like Jensen's, footballers.
Jensen's just horrible.
Right, so Liuzzi takes everyone out on turn one. Did you see what happened to Barrichello?
No.
This is classic. This is pull your choke out and stick your handbag on it time. He gets a good push from the marshals. Here we go. He's getting pushed back into play. Good on him. Fantastic. Then he thinks, I'm going to take a shortcut across the boulevard. And he manages to ground his car out. And his front wheels are wide up in the air. He can't move. He has to get pushed off it. That's the end of his race.
Yeah.
Good on you, Rubens.
I think Rubens Barrichello would be a bit of a laugh, you know. Of all the people that would, I'd like to go out for a pint, I think Rubens would be a good night out.
He's supposed to be one of the nicest guys in F1.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, What did you think of qualifying? Because that was quite interesting for me. I know, what's his name, opened his DRS a bit late and smashed his car up, didn't he? But apart from that, it seemed a bit of a non-event. But was there anything that struck you about qualifying? Because I've got one thing that I noticed that I thought was quite interesting.
There was only one event that particularly interests me, certainly enough to note it down during quali, which was in Q3, Lewis's fast time on the hard tyres. And I thought that was going to be significant for the race, but in the end, obviously, because of his race being compromised by Shuey, it didn't actually come into play. But the McLaren obviously was performing well on those hard tyres.
Well, you say the race being compromised by Shuey, but I thought Shuey ran an absolute blinder.
Oh yeah, he showed the other guys how to make that car as wide as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the comments that I got through from Tony was that he didn't feel that there'd been anything negative from. From Lewis Hamilton, which is strange for Tony because he's normally Mr. Anti to Lewis Hamilton. But he did say that, you know, Shuey was probably over the line on as he thought it. And I didn't think he was. I thought he was absolutely on the money. I thought he raced brilliantly.
Do you know, that's it's funny because I thought that too. And yet Shuey's been criticised by all the pundits. And yet I thought, well, no. I think he did really well. I mean, there was that one incident, and I know Ross Brawn had a word with him over the radio, and I think they were getting a bit worried, and I think that was quite a sensible thing to do. But generally, I think he showed how good a racing driver he still is.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, any thoughts?
My favourite bit of the whole Schumacher thing was the fact that Button just drove straight past him virtually.
Yeah, but he closed his eyes.
Yeah, but I prefer Button to Hamilton. I'm sure they're both equally good drivers, but just like the attitude of Button, that he just went for it. And maybe it's because of Schumacher made an issue or made a mistake and Hamilton made a mistake and Button went straight past him. But I just like the fact that Button got one up on Hamilton because I always feel he's put into a second place as a driver.
Well, they had the question over who's number one in the team.
Well, who's more reliable at the moment, and who's third in the championship?
Oh, and who's made up 12 places in the last three races? I mean,
and who has better starts?
Yeah. You mean who's second, Steve?
Second?
Alonso's second, isn't he?
Alonso second, says on my notes. Yeah. So I've made
five
notes.
Points.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, here we go. Have a think about this. What I'm about to say here. What I found interesting was the starting grid. Did you notice, and I've made me notes, here we go, see, look. The starting grid had the following. Both Red Bulls were separated, but the McLarens were together. The Renaults were separated, but both Force Indias were together. The Saubers were together. The Lotuses were together. The Williams were together. The Toro Rossos were together. And the Virgin cars were ready to get all together. And the HRT cars were together. So there was a definite segregation down the grid that was separated by manufacturer.
Mm.
And as soon as I saw that, I thought, let's think about Schumacher in the Mercedes, because he was relatively close to, what's his face? I can't remember his teammate. But
Rosberg.
That's the point. Rosberg, there we go. He was relatively close to him. He wasn't next to him, though.
He was actually.
So there's another one.
They were eighth and ninth on the grid.
There's another one then. So those two were together. And I'm sitting thinking, as soon as I saw that and I saw Vettel win, 12-second win, I mean, that's incredible. Schumacher comes in fifth. All of the teams are starting in manufacturing order. I want to see Shuey in a Red Bull. Get Webber out of there, stick Shuey in a Red Bull, and let's see Shuey and Vettel go head-to-head in the same car with the same setup, with the same tech, with the same support. And I think you might see a different story.
It would be good publicity for Red Bull as well, wouldn't it?
Well, as far as I can see, I mean, Webber is a nowhere man, isn't he? He's paled into ambiguity.
Can I give you my probably incorrect, completely and utterly wrong theory on this?
That's never stopped us before, mate. Go ahead.
Did you see, and this is absolute rubbish, but I'm going to go over it anyway. Did you see when Webber was walking down the pit, before the race, walking down the pit, and the Ferrari mechanic was coming the other way, and Webber just kind of high-fived him really well and kind of gave him a really good reaction, the Ferrari mechanic. I just thought, I wonder if...
So where's Massa driving next year then?
Well, that's it. If Webber went to Ferrari, that would have a space open at Red Bull. And I don't think Webber's done... You know, I think I can understand why he might move on to Ferrari as well.
That's my theory. It's the only place he could go, isn't it? Unless he goes down.
Yeah, he should go to Force India next year. I got to say, after his problems with the starting and the fact that Vettel hasn't had exactly the same, he's had some issues, but not exactly the same issues. And after this week, you know, you've had 3 weeks of Webber not getting off the start line. And then this week, he drops 3 places at the start. That guy's seriously got an issue. And he is, you know, he might have a chip on his shoulder about whether he's number one driver or not. But here's the other thing that made me think about it. The overtake of Alonso by Vettel. I mean, that on lap 5, Vettel drives with 2 tyres on the grass.
I know.
And he's got a wobble on and he still goes past. And then he wins the Grand Prix by 12 seconds. This guy is definitely world number one. There is no question he should be well ahead of everyone else as he currently is.
And 3 laps from the end, he was 14 seconds ahead, so he'd actually slowed down a bit.
Yeah.
That's a great picture that you just put on the screen. That's a brilliant picture you just put on the screen. Anyone who's listening to the audio podcast, you should get on and watch the video podcast.
Well, interestingly, the minute I put that up, I've just got an email from iTunes saying that our video podcasts for the other 3 podcasts have been accepted, so this one's going to go up, and this should be accepted as well. That's hooray. Huzzah.
But I've got another theory on that overtake. I think Vettel, the machine, because he is a machine, he's not actually human. I think he did it just because he knows he is, you know, he knows he's won the championship. He knows he can take that type of risk. And it was a little bit of, it was daring, but he did it knowing that he can kind of get away with it.
He'd got less to lose than Alonso in that. Yeah, you're right, Steve.
I think that does him a disservice.
That's amazing.
That was just a quality, ballsy, this is mine, get back where you belong, mate. Don't even think, you know, you're a pretender. Get stuffed. I'm going to win.
But you know he would not do that in his machine days, in the first half of the season, he would not do that.
Yeah. I think he's got a streak of confidence now that means that he would do it. And I think even if it was really tight in the championship, he would still be doing it. He's got one. You know, this is the thing with these guys. You listen to the interview with Button on Top Gear a few years back where Clarkson says to him, so is it really that important that you win the world championship or you win your first Grand Prix? And he says, well, I'm sitting with my grandchildren on Mini. I'm not going to tell them I earned 30 million quid in a season. I'm going to tell them that I won the world championship. I'm going to tell them that I won Grand Prix. And he said, of course, it's more important than anything else. You take all the money and keep it if you want. And I think that's the thing with Vettel is he's got all the money in the world. He's been world number one. He's absolutely crushed the competition last year. He's crushing them this year. This guy, he's no longer thinking about second place. It's first or it's nothing.
I start feeling guilty when I watch the Grand Prix now.
Why? Because the wife's going to give you a slap?
No, not again. Halfway through, I just start thinking, I hope his car just messes up. I hope he goes...
I've been thinking it for ages.
I just can't stand him constantly winning. I'm praying for the machine just go bang.
It's a bit like we were oil with Chewie like. in the mid 2000s.
You reckon?
Oh yeah. And yet the thing I always used to say about the Schumacher thing is when he was winning and winning in the same way that Vettel is now, everyone seemed to forget about the fact that when he first joined Ferrari, that team was so unreliable and he helped get them to where they are.
Yeah,
I think he definitely earned the right, and Ferrari earned the right to be that dominant for that period of time.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't get the same thing with Vettel, that he's got that relationship with, you know, the team captain and they've developing that.
Oh, I agree.
I just don't. I think he's like the spoiled, I know he isn't, but he just feels like that he's got everything right and it's been given to him.
I think that's interesting. If you look at the Schumacher interview about him and Rosberg running separate gear ratios and setups, and you've got Webber running separate gear ratios from Vettel, these guys are picking their own setups, and Vettel is not picking a better setup. Vettel is picking the setup for him. And that says a lot. If he's picking a better setup that's engineeringly tested on a computer, then fair enough. But these guys are picking, they've got the choice of the computer picking what it thinks is best for them, but they're picking their own setups. And he's streets ahead by the process. So there's an engineering nous that's going along with that, that's not just about being a fast driver, although as well, he is snot quick.
I think there may be something in that. However, I think it's, there is an element of that they will have been advised, if you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this could happen. If you do this, this could happen. And it's okay, right, which one do you want to pick?
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, I think it is good advice. But yes, you do need to have that understanding about how it actually all hangs together and what the consequences could be, and apply that to your driving style.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Definitely. Any magic moments then for us?
I think there were a few. Mine was, because as you know, I'm a huge Button fan, was the battle between Schumacher and Lewis. Button appears on the scene and just drives past both of them. That was classic. I was absolutely roaring with laughter. Well, I know that Shuey's tyres were going off, but just Jensen just made it look so easy compared with the battle that Lewis was having.
Well, I think the McLaren Schumacher issue, there's a microcosm there, because Schumacher wasn't running DRS, was he?
They do struggle with it.
Yeah, so, I mean, are we getting a turbo-non-turbo divide kind of thing that's starting to exist between some of the teams that was there in the 80s with turbos and non-turbos? Is the DRS, non-DRS thing an issue? If you can't make DRS work, you're not in it anymore. Because the one thing that I thought that Schumacher definitely did was he used Kurs instead of DRS. So every time that they hit a DRS zone, he was hitting the Kurs at the same time. And that's why Lewis struggled. And he'd just run out by the time that Button passed him. I think he would have given Button just as big a headache.
I think it was more to do with attitude of overtaking. For some reason, Hamilton's head was, I'm not going to take overdue risks here. Yeah. Button stormed up behind them and just managed to see the gap and just go for it, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
just more attitude, I think.
There was some talk today that I saw in the media that it was very clear that Lewis was driving just to finish the race. But I really don't buy that, because in the situation he's now in, Lewis is out of the championship. He cannot mathematically win the world title. So what would he possibly have had to lose by doing that?
Yeah.
You know, Yeah, I mean, he would have been doing everything he possibly could.
Definitely. My magic moment was the Vettel overtake. I've got to say, you know, you can go back to all of the stuff that you really want to look at, but Vettel overtaking Alonso on turn five, that set the tone of the Grand Prix. It separated him. It showed him as head and shoulders above every other driver. And I've been wishing for him to crash as well as up until this week, and I don't want him to crash anymore now. I want him to absolutely crush everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, he went up in my estimation because of that.
He is balls and all racer. And I want to see Shuey in the Red Bull next year. I know it's never going to happen. I know it's complete and utter fantasy, but I want Shuey in the Red Bull next year, and him and Vettel head to head, and the pair of them may have each other off, who cares? But that would be the tournament. I mean, you can clearly see that the separation between the drivers now is not talent, it's manufacturing standard. That's what that grid said to me. And I want it to be a separation between the drivers. This was the beauty of the Sky F1 that wasn't. At least they were all driving the same cars.
Yeah. I'd love to see that, where they all have the same, literally they all have exactly the same cars, because it would sort them all out. Who was the good one, who wasn't?
Totally.
Have you seen that rumour anywhere else in terms of Schumacher and Red Bull?
No, I haven't.
Was that purely your own?
No, I just, as soon as I saw the grid, I just clocked the fact that so many of the teams were together. And my first thought was, well, that means there's an engineering separation, not a driver separation then. Because if there was a driver separation, the whole grid would have been all over the place. You know, you'd have a few people in teams that were at 7 and 10 or 7 and 12 or 7 and 15. And you didn't. You got nearly every team was right next to each other all the way through the grid. And that's at the point where you think, well, actually, it's not a driver race anymore. The only thing you can say is from places 1 to 5, you've got Vettel, who's streets ahead of everyone else, and Webber, who's clearly just useless because he's back at 5. You've given him the same car as the one that Vettel wins by 12 seconds of the Grand Prix, and the dude can't get off and starts into turn 1 8 places off the lead, not 5.
I mean,
that's rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You could certainly about the start, you could say that, but it might be just that Vettel is just driving the wheels off that car.
And I mean, if you looked at all the other manufacturers, the separation between their two drivers is the engineering of the cars. Between Red Bull, the separation between Red Bull is Vettel is snot hot. Webber is a has-been driver.
What about the difference between Alonso and Massa?
Well, even they were only 2 places apart on the grid.
Yeah, I know, but it's always Alonso that ends up at the front end of the grid.
No, I'm not saying he's not a better driver, but what I'm saying is the separation between the two of them, that separation is the drivers, but it's a small separation between the two. You look at Webber and Vettel. Webber's never anywhere near Vettel. I mean, he's just, you know, even if he's second, he's 15 to 18 to 20 seconds off the pace.
Yeah, you think he has gone off a bit, but remember that, you know, just over a year ago, he got 3 poles in a row and won, was it 2 or 3 races in a row?
I think there's a lot to what Steve's saying about the high five there with Ferrari guys. I think Webber has realised his days have come to an end at Red Bull. He's not happy for a start, which is probably affecting his performance. And he wants out, and he just wants to see the end of the season through. And he's driving like a man who's waiting for the end of the season, in my book.
But he's probably got the hardest, again, probably wrong, but he's probably got the hardest seat in Formula One.
Yeah.
Driving next to the machine that is Vettel is, even though he's in Red Bull and it's an amazing car and it's an amazing team, but imagine all the press conferences and all the press stuff that they have to do, and he's the one who's in the same team as Vettel, so it's probably not easy for him, which is why it's probably affecting his racing mind state as well.
Just like it was for Barrichello when Chewie was at Ferrari.
Yeah, they weren't best of friends at all, were they?
No.
Yeah.
I think there's a compounding of factors, most definitely, but I think the one thing that's the clear message, and I think we're probably all agreed in, is that Webber's got to leave Red Bull at the end of the season, because I don't think there's a future for it, even if you wanted it to be.
The trouble is, who's going to want to be Vettel's teammate?
I want Schumacher to be. I want Jensen to be. I want another driver who's going to take him on and not respond to team orders.
But they won't.
I think there's team orders there, which doesn't
Schumacher is the one person. But Schumacher is the one person who could sit in that seat and would push Vettel a lot, wouldn't he? That would be a good thing, because he would push Vettel. It'd be somebody from Vettel to learn from. It's somebody German as well, so it's kind of the helping each other from where they've come back
but
from.
But Chewie won't take that role. He's not interested in doing it. He wants to be number one himself.
Good on him. And I think
he's got something to prove.
But I think this weekend has proved that he can't be number one unless he's got the Red Bull car. That's the key part.
I'd still like to see him back in a Ferrari. I think that would be interesting alongside Alonso.
I think that would be awesome. But he's never going to play second fiddle to Alonso, is he?
Yeah, I know. We know what happened. Look what happened at McLaren with Lewis.
I think, now here's the interesting thing. Do you remember that film with Sylvester Stallone that was absolute rubbish, Driven?
Which one was that? Oh, Driven.
which Sylvester Stallone was rubbish? No.
It's called Demolition Man.
Driven. Do you remember Driven? Where there's the young rookie gets the car and they get the old guy in to coach him through and be number two and see him through to the end. And that's what I think would happen with Schumacher and Vettel. But Schumacher, I don't think, is of the same persuasion. He wouldn't be being pulled in to see the youngster through. He'd come in and he'd go, no, I want to kick the youngster's backside.
Absolutely.
And good on him. I would love to see, it's never going to happen. I've got no doubts it's never going to happen, but I would love to see Schumacher sit in the car next to Vettel, 1 and 2 in Red Bull, and what a race that would be. Oh.
I'm tempted to go see what the odds are now on Schumi going over to Red Bull. I bet there are odds before you can buy it.
Well, we should look for the next time. Is it Singapore next?
It is indeed, in 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time, Singapore. Big old journey out from Italy to Singapore.
And it's a night race.
So we can watch it.
Street race in the nighttime.
Yeah, so we can watch it in the daylight over here.
Yeah.
Can I give my... Sorry.
Go ahead, mate.
Can I give my favourite bit?
Oh, have you not done it? Sorry, pal.
I haven't, no.
All right, go ahead.
There's two bits. Right, in the race was when Hamilton was catching Alonso at the end. I wrote down all of the gaps. I was so interested in the race from lap 45 through to 50. So right through to the very end of the race, he was catching almost a second lap, which was quite interesting. Mm. But my favourite bit was the post-interview when the BBC crew had obviously the crowd in the background. And did you hear what the crowd were chanting?
No.
Did anyone... The crowd were chanting in the background with Eddie Jordan there, and the presenter, I can't remember his name at the moment, but the crowd were shouting, no more sky, or say no to sky. It was quite loud. Maybe I was the only one that heard it, but it was quite interesting. That's obviously what the crowd are, the public state is in terms of trying to say no to sky. Make no zero difference at all, but yeah, it was quite interesting.
No, excellent news. Well, it'd be very good if Sky actually didn't win, I have to say. Because, I mean, I know it's a bit of a foregone conclusion already, but it would be nice if they didn't actually do it, most definitely.
Oh, I totally agree. It needs to stay on the BBC.
Definitely.
Yes, spot on coverage it is.
It is good. I've got to say that, like I said, I did see the coverage of the Formula 3 stuff the other week. And Sky didn't screw it up. It still was good, definitely.
I'm sure they do a top job.
I mean, I just watch it and I think I look at the way that Jake and DC and Eddie Jordan are with the drivers, the team principals, and so on and so forth. And I just think if you brought new people in, they really have that kind of relationship with the teams. And as a viewer, that's exactly the kind of thing you want to see.
The question is whether they bring new people in, though, or not, isn't it, Sarah? I mean,
Martin's not committed.
Well, exactly. He's out of contract with the BBC, so there's a possibility that he could go through and take over.
I hope he does, but he's keeping his options open. I don't blame him.
Good on him. Oh, absolutely. No question. That would be nearly good. Last words, we've got some sponsors for you. The first one is a fantastic firm. I mean, we love these guys. It's the Magic and Motoring. If you go to magicandmotoring.co.uk, they have got some incredible stuff. I'm showing a picture here on the video podcast of the original race jackets from Shell. They are licensed to produce Shell memorabilia in the UK. If you've got it from anywhere else and it's got Shell on it, it's not authorised. These guys are the only people that can do it, and they've got some incredibly stunning equipment. They've got race jackets, as I said. They've got the original brown overalls that you would have expected from the 1950s and 60s in Formula One and Mille Miglia and that kind of stuff. They look absolutely gorgeous. They've got leather apparel and stuff like that that's got stamped with the Shell logo. It all looks absolutely gorgeous stuff. Go to magicandmotoring.co.uk, and if you could, please send them an email and say that you heard about them on Bagel Tech. We haven't got a tracking link set yet, unfortunately, but send them an email, have a look at the stuff, tell them if you like the stuff, and just say, I came and had a look because I heard about you on Bagel Tech. And you should get a reply back from them, and they might give you an offer code. So do go through, do have a look, and please make sure that you mention Bagel Tech to them, because we rely on people being kind to us. So please be kind for all of our supporters. And the other people that you've got to look for is UK2. UK2.net are the people that support and sponsor the bandwidth on Bagel Tech. They pick up every ounce that we've got. If you possibly can, please go to bageltechnews.com. You'll find a UK2 logo on there. Click on the UK2 logo. That takes you through. They know we've sent you. When you buy all your stuff and you check out, please use the offer code Bagel Tech, and that'll get you 15% off whatever it is that you purchased. Then you'll get another opportunity to use an offer code. And if you've transferred in a domain name, there's a DNS management charge that comes with UK2. Bagel Tech listeners don't pay that. So as soon as you get your second opportunity, type in Bagel DNS as your offer code, and the DNS management code will disappear, as well as your 15% that you're going to get. Okay, so that's UK2.net. Must support them, because otherwise we'd have no bandwidth. And if we had no bandwidth, there wouldn't be any podcasts. We really do rely on them. Thanks ever so much to UK2. Anything to add about the Italian Grand Prix before we disappear and wait to reconvene for Singapore?
Bring on Singapore.
Oh. I know there's not much of a race anymore, but the race for two looks like it could be a doozy.
Race for two is really close.
You gotta think it's going to be between Alonso and Jensen, then, haven't you?
Was it 7 or 8 points, I think, between the top
four? It's Fernando Alonso. Alonso on 172. Button on 167 and Hamilton way behind in 158.
Oh, he's got a bit of work to do then.
Yeah, he can't, unfortunately. He's actually out of it now.
Is there an outside runner on the ropes coming up, Steve?
No.
So here you go, a 20 quid bet. You can't lose because I'm going to give you the 20 quid. You want your best return. Who are you going to put your money on?
What, for second?
For second.
Button.
Is that going to get you your best return, though? Is he not the odds-on favourite?
I'm ignoring the odds. I just know that Button will get second.
Sarah, I don't even need to ask you, I fear. But...
Yeah, I mean, I know I was going to say Button, but you've only got to look at his performance in the last few races. Mm. He's been on the podium for the last three in all the positions. He's, apart from Vettel, he's very much the driver of the moment.
Absolutely.
I think he's purposely doing it to show himself against Hamilton, because everyone's giving the attention to Hamilton, and remember they've had those clashes mid-season as well, so he's purposely got something to prove against Hamilton, as opposed to Alonso that's just doing it, and you know,
could we see a lot more passion. Could we see a Prost Senna moment where they just both drive each other off the track in the crucial race?
Nah, don't think so.
That'd be interesting.
Or Damon Hill, Michael Schumacher in, was it 94?
My head says Alonso, my heart says Button, I have to say. There you go. Where can we get a hold of you, Sarah?
You can get a hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Brilliant. Steve?
At CloughHQ. And at the London Mac User Group.
Right, what you need to do now is, because the next one we'll probably have to do on Monday night as well, you've got to organise an Elmug event.
I can do this at Elmug if you want me to.
They can come on F1.
Yeah, I can do this at Elmug. It might be a little bit noisy though.
It's alright, we need the music to
even more noisy than my fans.
Yeah, we'll be fine. If you're bothered, you can get hold of me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter or at Bagel Tech News. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the Singapore Grand Prix, and it's all open for second, so watch this space.